Be friendly, and you'll have friends. That's what we're talking about today. This is in Philemon, verses 8 through 19. He who would have friends must show himself friendly. I heard this verse the first time when I went to college. Old farm boy up to Philadelphia. The first thing I heard at the orientation was from Dr. Clarence Mason, who was the academic dean, and he said, let me suggest something to you. No, let me tell you something about your life. When you're here in college, you're meeting all new friends. All your old friends are back home. Now you have new people here. Said, here's a verse I want you to see, and I want you to hear and use. And the verse was Proverbs 18:24. And it reads like this: a man who would have friends must himself be friendly. And there is a friend that sticks closer than a brother. That's it. Our friendship will attract other people. If you want friends, be friendly. That's the key. Well, friends don't come by osmosis. There are some prerequisites. And the major one is friendliness produces friends. Paul had his moments on this friend stuff. Back in Acts chapter 15, verse 36, Paul had gone on the first missionary journey prior to that. One day he got thinking about all the people that we met on that first missionary journey. Let's go back. And so he found Barnabas and said, Barnabas, let's go back to these people. Let's see them. See how they're doing. And Barnabas said, oh, great. I'll go get my cousin or nephew, whichever. I'll get my cousin, John Mark. And Paul said, no way. John Mark's not going with us. Well, why would that be? Well, because John Mark left them in the middle of the work. In fact, going on to the continent to get the work done, he left. He went back home to Mama. Paul didn't like that. Paul said, he will not go with us. And he was cousin of Barnabas. Barnabas said, well, he's going to go with me. And so they split up and they went two different ways. But that, to me, it even said that the feeling was so strong between them that they parted company. Now, that's not friend. That is bad. But at the same time, the Lord used that. And then later on, Paul was reconciled to both of them. In Colossians 4, verse 10, Paul says this. He said, Mark, the cousin of Barnabas, about whom you receive instructions, if he comes to you, welcome him. Wow. Paul learned something. And then Barnabas, same thing, in 1 Corinthians 9:6, he says, only Barnabas and I, who have the right to refrain from working, only just two of us, he puts himself with Barnabas. Barnabas is one like me. Well, he's back to them. But don't forget, there was a problem there. He had a problem, and he got on the wrong side of them. But even if he was wrong in that case, this section here shows that Paul was the soul of tact. He learned something in his life. He learned how to be friendly. He learned how to have friends. He learned how to treat friends. He was walking on eggshells when he was writing this to Philemon and telling him about Onesimus and all that. He was walking on eggshells to do the right thing, to say it right. And he approached Philemon on three points: the necessities, the responsibilities, and the liabilities. First of all, he talks about the necessities in verses 8 through 13. Verse 8, he says, Paul gives his rights. Verse 8, therefore, though I might be very bold in Christ to command you what is fitting, Paul, an apostle, I can be bold if I wanted to. That's my right. I'm an apostle. I can tell you what to do. Paul was apostle number 13. Matthias was number 12. And Judas, number nothing. He'd been thrown out. But Paul was an apostle, no doubt about it. He was apostle to these Gentiles. He was their apostle. And so we need to know who we are. Paul knew who he was. I have rights, and I'm not saying, oh, I'm some little thing cowering over here somewhere. No, I have rights. I know what my rights are. We should be confident in who we are in Christ. And then we ought to recognize that we are in Christ. It's in Christ. And in Christ, I'm nothing. He is everything. But I have these rights. Now, so Paul gives his rights. But then, in verses 9 through 13, Paul gives up his rights. Oh, wow. How many friends are you going to get when you're forcing people to do things like Paul? No. Nothing. Paul, that's what he did back in the earlier days. But now he's saying, no, I'll give up my rights. He's doing this in favor of the higher ground. I'll go to the higher ground. Oh, we're having problems down here? No, we're on higher ground. I'm up here. For love's sake, I rather appeal to you. I could force you to do this, Philemon. But no, sir, I'm going to ask you. I'm going to appeal to you. And I'm doing this now not because of apostleship. I'm telling you because I'm Paul the aged. I can almost hear him say, Paul the, I'm so old. And I'm a prisoner of Jesus Christ. That's what he's coming to. That's where I am. I'm appealing on that basis. And you say, well, how old was Paul? Well, at this time, Paul was 57. Old man. Just a kid. The average expectancy, though, in that time, was from 50 to 60. So he was approaching it. He lived another 5 years, so he was 62 when he died. But Paul was an old man in that case. And he was a prisoner. Notice he says a prisoner of Jesus. Wasn't a prisoner of Rome. Wasn't a prisoner of the Jews. A prisoner of Jesus. He was there for Jesus' sake. So he was showing the higher ground that he took. It's a lot better to preach, to ask somebody to do things from this level than to force them to do it from this level. Can't do that. So he said, I want to have favor of higher gains. I gained a new son. Verse 10. I appeal to you for my son. That is my own child. He only uses this two other times when he's referring to Timothy and to Titus. Those three are his favorite, his sons. My own son, he said. And whom I have begotten. So Paul probably led him to faith in Christ. Remember, he ran away from Onesimus. And from Philemon, and he went to to Rome to hide in the crowd, and the Lord knew where he was and pulled him out and got him over to Paul. Paul led him to the Lord. Well, he didn't have many opportunities to do that on a one-on-one basis, but here was one he had, and that was his only son, his special son, and he didn't have. He did have contact with him all the time. He had a good relationship with Onesimus. And then he says, you, I gained something. Now you gained too. You gained a new slave who once was unprofitable to you, but now he is profitable to you and to me, to both of us. The greatest gain went to Philemon. He had gained his slave back, but now he's not just a slave of Philemon. He's a slave of Jesus Christ. He's going to serve him. And if you serve, wherever you are, in your job, whatever relationships you have, if you serve the Lord, then you have to do what people over you say. But if you do it, say, well, no, okay, I'm serving the Lord. Lord, I'm going to do this for you. How hard is that? So Onesimus is now going to be a servant of Jesus Christ under Philemon. Now, the word Onesimus means useful. And Paul is using a literary device called paronomasia. That is, using a play on words. We have a little different word for that today. We call it a pun. Somebody makes a play on words and say, oh, that's a pun. Well, we used to say back in my day, somebody said gave a pun like that, we'd say, oh, that's two-thirds of a pun. P-U. Anyway, he was doing a pun here, a paronomasia. And he was saying, going from he was unprofitable, now he is profitable. That's him. So the word is for Onesimus, then he's saying he's unprofitable. And then now he is profitable. It's just the same word, except the word on the letter on the front makes the difference. Now, so he's going to higher ground. He's going for higher gain, his and Philemon. And then he was doing it in favor of higher goals. For Philemon, receiving or receiving not. Are you going to receive him back, Philemon? Receive this slave back? He ran away from you, stole money from you. You're going to take him back? I'm sending him back. Therefore, receive him. That is my own heart. The guy is closest to my heart. Receive him as you would me. So Philemon could kill him. You can kill a runaway slave in those days. And he could mistreat him, could whip him, do all kinds of things. And but he said, no, you take him back as you would me. Then Paul, the question with Paul then was, shall I send him or shall I keep him here? Shall I retain him or not retain him? He says in verse 13, whom I wish to keep with me, that in your behalf he might minister to me in my chains for the gospel. I'd like to keep him here, but Paul wanted to keep him. No question about that. But he's going to serve someone. Why not Paul? Paul's the one who turned him around. Paul's the one who made him a profitable servant. Why shouldn't he do that? But then Paul chose to forego that. His own necessity. His necessity had, I'm going to let that go. I'm going to go on to other things. So those are his necessities. And then arguing along the lines of responsibility, 14 to 17. The responsibility of Paul was a legal restoration. The slave belonged to Philemon. Paul could have kept him, but he said, no, I'm going to send him back. Without your consent, verse 14, without your consent, I wanted to do nothing that your good deed might not be by compulsion, as it were, but voluntary. See, if Paul had kept Onesimus there with him, then it would be Philemon would have no say in the matter. So he would be giving him up, but not willingly. So Paul said, I'm sending him back to you. I think Paul was hoping that Philemon would send him back so that he could be Paul's helper. But he said, I won't do that. I won't keep him. If you want to send him back, good. So if he kept him, he would make Philemon's decision for him. Well, what choice would he have? Of course. So Philemon has a choice then. And if he wants to send him back, he can do it. But then, Paul, there's another responsibility, the responsibility of Philemon. I'm sorry, of Onesimus, his life redemption, verse 15. For perhaps he departed for a while for this purpose, that you might receive him forever. His life has changed. Out of gratitude, he should serve not only as a his human master, but serve the his spiritual master, Jesus Christ. So that he'll be a that's his whole life is going to change now. He'll still be a slave, as far as we know, but he's going to do it in a different angle. That's his responsibility. Change his life, turn his life around through Jesus Christ. And then the responsibility of Philemon, a love relationship. In the negative side, he's no longer a slave. Receive him, no longer as a slave. Legally, he may still claim that Onesimus is still his property. Legally, yes. But human laws are not the ultimate law. So he's saying to him, the negative side is not as receive him, not as a slave. But then the positive side is, 16b, but more than a slave, a beloved brother. Whoa, that's a big difference. A beloved brother, especially to me, but now much more to you, both in the flesh and in the Lord. He now is more than a slave to Paul and to Philemon, to the flesh and to the Lord. He is more than a slave. He's a brother. And then the superlative here. Negative, positive, superlative. Verse 17. If then you count me as a partner, receive him as you would me. Boy, this goes one step farther, doesn't it? That's the ultimate. Receive him as you would me. No longer a slave, much more than a slave, the same as you would if the Apostle Paul came. You wouldn't put Paul in chains. Don't put him in chains. That's a great change for him. Now, that's the necessities, the responsibility. Now, the liability. Along the lines of a liability, he's arguing. Verses 18 and 19. What was owed to Philemon? Paul says, if he wronged you or owes you anything, put that on my account. I will pay. I, Paul, I'm writing this. I will repay you. What would Paul have to do with this? Remember, Paul the Apostle, I could force you to do this. No. I'll even pay his bills. Oh, no. This is great. You don't lose a thing, Philemon. You lost a slave. If he took any money from you, I'll pay you. All the time he's away, you haven't had his services, I'll pay you that too. Just put it on my account. It's a bookkeeping thing. You know, it's like this is a non-theological picture of imputation. Jesus died on the cross. He paid all our sin debt. And he said to the Father on the cross, whatever he or she owes, I'll pay it. For the whole world. Not limited, unlimited. The world. He died for the world. And Jesus Christ on the cross is doing the same thing that Paul did here. Whatever he owes, I'll pay it. And Jesus said, whatever anybody, with you. I can point to everybody here in just a few seconds. Yeah. Whatever he or she owes, I'll pay it. I'll die for them. I'll pay the price right here. He did that. And then he did it voluntarily, of course. Said, put that on my account. I'll pay it. And he did. For God made him to be sin for us, the one who knew no sin, that we might be made the righteousness of God in him. That's it. That's the picture. I was riding on the highway, and I don't know how I got next to a truck. And I saw on the side of the truck something I'll never forget. And it said this, I owed a debt I could not pay. He paid a debt he did not owe. That's it. That's what Paul's saying. Onesimus owes this debt. I'll pay it because I can do it. Now, so the Father did this only with the son's willingness to do so, of course. He says in Hebrews, "Behold, I come, and the volume of the book is written of me, to do your will, O God." So Paul is really putting himself in the debt of Philemon. He's saying, put that in my ledger. I don't know too much about bookkeeping, but there's a debit side and a credit side. Here's the debit side. Here's your credit side. And he's saying, okay, put all that he owes you on my debit side. Paul the Apostle, debit. Look at all the stuff he owes Philemon on the basis of Onesimus. Now, that's what he owed. Now, what was owed by Philemon? That's what was owed to him. Now, what was owed by him? Then he says, verse 19b, and this is so subtle. He said, man, what happened to Paul here? Paul says, I'm not going to mention that you owe me even your own self beside. Well, now we're coming over to the credit side. How much credit does Paul have with Philemon? Oh, a lot of credit. Your whole life on this side. The little debt that Onesimus owed, now look what you owe me. He brings the iron fist in a little bit, but he puts it in a velvet glove. So he brings up the credit side of the ledger just to balance the whole thing. While you're there, he says, while you're there working on my debit side, check the credit side, see where I am. Now, what I want us to see is this. The Apostle Paul could have thundered at him. What are you doing here? You should be taking him back. I demand that you take him back. No, no. You think those two would have been friends after that? No, no. I am appealing to you not as the great apostle. You have to do this. No. What I'm saying to you is, please do it. I'm giving you good reasons for doing it. But I'm not saying you have to do it. They're friends. They were friends after that, I'm sure. They're friends today in heaven. They're sitting up there saying, hey, look, there's a guy down there preaching about us. Yeah. Because he was friendly. He can have friends. People will not always do things the way you want them to do it. They don't always do things right. Nobody talked to me today. How many did you talk to? See? Show yourself friendly. And as you do that, then there'll be friends. Because the friendly person's going to get the friends. I really think that the Apostle Paul, he's doing a lot of good theological stuff here. Got a lot of practical stuff too. He who would have friends must show himself friendly. And there is a friend that sticks closer than a brother, and that's Jesus Christ. What a friend we have in Jesus. If I knew earlier in the week exactly what we were going to get here, we would have been singing, What a Friend We Have in Jesus right now. Yeah. That's it. So, let's take a page out of Paul's book. Let's be a friendly person. And then we'll be a friendly church. And then we'll be more like that friend we have in Jesus.